Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Friday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick on the show today. NVIDIA had some earnings. Disney had some earnings. Nordstrom had some earnings. Retail seems to be in favor. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about weakness in the TLT. And at 8:35, we are joined by a special guest. He's going to give us some stock advice from a higher authority. The Reverend Emmanuel Lemelsing will join us at 8:35. Joel, how's it going this morning in the S&Ps?
A little bit in the red. We had a nice rebound off 63.25 yesterday. That was right in the area of last week's low. Follow through on the close, but at 6 p open, you found sellers just above the close at 84 even. Traded down to 71.5. Now just hanging out in the 70, mid-70 handle. I'm looking mid-range on the session here, 78.75. That will be the key to any upside. Gold down $1.90 at 1285.60. Let's take a look at the daily chart pattern in gold here. See if there's anything sticking out to us in the gold market. Potential breakout, three highs in the same area, but down on the day. Crude back in the 57 handle, a couple tops in the upper 57 handle, 57.92, the high of the move here. So nice rally, some consolidation. Gold doesn't, or crude doesn't look like it's ready to go back down yet. Good morning to you, Dennis. How you doing on this Veterans Day? Now, I know you guys don't have Veterans Day in Canada.
We don't. We have what's called Remembrance Day, and we have that on November the 11th. So you have Veterans Day on the 10th?
Yes, yes.
I think our Remembrance Day is November 11th. So other Canadians in the chat, help me out there. I'm pretty sure it's November the 11th. My dates are all, it's early in the morning. My dates are getting confused, but we do have a type of Veterans Day. We call it Remembrance Day.
But you don't, I mean, you guys have never had an army or anything. So how,
come on, don't make fun of the Canadian army. We do have an army. It might not be as big as the U.S. Army. It may not be as relevant as the U.S. Army, but you know, and if we went to war with the U.S., we would probably be in a whole world of trouble, but we do have an army.
I mean, is it in remembrance of the horses that passed away?
No, it's remembrance. Don't make fun of our Remembrance Day. It's a remembrance of our soldiers as well. Oh. So we don't make fun of the Canadian Remembrance Day. Nestor doesn't say it is November 11th. We wear a poppy. So we're poppy. A little red
hold
poppy.
On, thanks. Yeah,
that... You should. Joel makes fun of all this stuff, guys. And meanwhile, he's half Canadian. His mother was Canadian. So he knows this stuff.
She he's still just is messing Canadian.
With
us. She still
he
is.
Likes messing with the Canadian.
It's just so
and you know what else? We got snow, and I know you got some snow there too. So the snow doesn't just come to Canada in November. It actually went across the border as well. So
okay. All right. I got a nice laugh out of the desk here, but we got to get to the markets here. There's some nice trading action in the after hours. We got Disney, NVIDIA. What's your choice, Dennis? Where do you want to go?
Let's go to NVIDIA. This one I actually tried to get down and dirty in, and this was a chop fest. And I tried to buy it. I thought it was going higher. Actually, I tried to short it off the bat, and I was right. But I got shaken out. And then I tried to buy it, and then I got shaken out. And then I tried to short, and I got shaken out. I had three small losing trades in a row on it, and I was like, you know what? No, this thing is just too choppy. And if you look at the after-hours chart, it went up. It went down. It went up. It went down. It went up. It went down. And finally, it ended up going up about an hour after the report. But people were, you know, I guess it was, you know, it was a good report, and we're going to get those numbers from Spencer right now, and then I'll continue on with my details.
Okay.
NVIDIA Q3 adjusted EPS of $1.33 versus a 94 cent estimate, sales of $2.64 billion versus a $2.36 billion estimate. So a beat there on the EPS and a beat on the sales. Q4 sales guidance coming in higher as well, $2.65 billion versus a $2.43 billion estimate. The EPS, their gross margins coming in higher as well. They're increasing their dividend by a penny, 14 cents to 15 cents. If you are long NVIDIA because of their exposure to cryptocurrencies, We got some comments on the conference call from the CEO. They said, over the long term, crypto is a small part of the company, but not 0%. And they believe crypto will be around for some time at the level that it is at today in terms of their exposure.
So, and show that after hours chart there, Joel, on NVIDIA, yep. Because it was just a chop fest. So it was torn, because here was an example of a stock that had been kind of running up in the report, although it did sell off a little bit yesterday ahead of the report. They liked the report so much they were buying, but then you had the people coming in like me saying, well, they've been selling strong stocks on good reports, so I was trying to short it, and other people trying to short it. And it just whipsawed around. It went up to 210, it went down to 201, it went up to 209 again, down to 206 or 205, then flirted with like even for like an hour, and then finally the bids started to roll in. I don't know, maybe they said something on a conference call, but the bids did start to eventually roll in, and the stock did end up going higher and is obviously up $10 now. It is a good report though.
I'll just go with pre-market high, 216.75. you're only $1.40 off that, right near a whole number, 217. So you got a target on the long side, that would be a good one. Of course, it blows through 216.75, more continued upside. On the downside, I mean, I see a spike here just in the two brackets ago under, this is a 5-minute chart, under 212 here. But to me, that 212 even, 212.90, those were the highs from Tuesday and Wednesday. So call minor support, 212.45 on the downside, looking at that pre-market high to come into range if the rally continues.
It was AMD was getting a little bit of a, and I've always traded AMD with NVIDIA to a certain extent, but that pair in the last month hasn't really held water at all. I mean, AMD just does its own thing. NVIDIA does its own thing. AMD was moving a little bit off the report, but it used to move like about, it used to actually move percent for percent if you look back 3-4 months ago, but that has completely broken down. That relationship is just pretty much non-existent here right now. But we are getting a lift here on AMD as well, so it's lifting it a little bit here this morning. It's trading up 1.4% on a day that the market is down, so you can thank NVIDIA for the little up move here in AMD. Give us some quick rundown technicals in AMD we haven't talked about for a few days.
Oh, what a chop fest in AMD over the last couple days. I'll just say
it is.
Yeah, buy got over 12. This whole $11 area, AMD likes to do this. You have a series of three lows and four lows actually in the same area from 1066 to 1082. So 1070 major support, but you're getting a little bump, 1128. Gap to fill from yesterday's session up to the low from Thursday or from Wednesday at 1151. So 11.5 early range prediction here for AMD.
Let's jump over to the House of Mouse, Disney reporting earnings last night. And I'm telling you, it wasn't just NVIDIA that was a chop fest. This Disney was chopping around there too. It got hammered down to 97 and 77. And then the conference call, and they were talking some good stuff on the call, and the stock got all those losses back. So BTFD wins in Disney last night. Spencer, details from the House of Mouse.
Q4 adjusted EPS of $1.07 versus $1.15 estimate, so they missed that by 8 cents. Sales of $12.779 billion versus $13.34 billion, so they missed that number as well. I know we always like, or I always like to see a breakdown by their segments of their business, so here we go. Media networks decreased by 3%. This is talking about revenue now. Broadcasting income revenue down $42 million due to lower ad revenue. Parks and resorts revenues increased by 6%. Studio entertainment down 21%. Consumer products down 6%. So all in all, a pretty bad report. The headline from the conference call probably would have been the fact that there's going to be more ESPN layoffs, but then they casually drop in there towards the end there that, oh, by the way, there's going to be more Star Wars films, and here we are.
And common stock came all the way back. So it went right to where it had support before, though. And these levels do work a lot of times off earnings. And that's John Dodds was asking me a little bit, what I was trading last night in NVIDIA. I do use the levels sometimes when I'm trading the primary earnings report there. There's really not a lot else you can do if you're going to trade the primary stock. My classic play is to trade the sympathy plays. But, you know, NVIDIA hasn't had that much sympathy going with it lately. Like, I used to always trade AMD with NVIDIA. And like I said, that hasn't been working as well as it has in the past. So I was kind of just, you know, getting down dirty and just, you know, trading NVIDIA. What I typically do if I'm trading something with, you know, an earnings report is I'm going to trade with less size because the moves are going to be bigger. So, you know, if I typically trade, you know, and we'll just use this as an example. Let's say you typically trade with 1,000 shares. I might be trading with 300 or 400 shares only because the moves are going to be so much bigger. And it was really chopping around there last night. I got chopped up too. And like I said, I had 3 small losing trades in a row. The whole key, you know, look at the different levels. And if you're looking at a stock, and this is why I went on the tangent, like Disney last night, it had support down there where it found support multiple times in the 96 handle. Didn't quite get down there. I wish it would have got a little lower because I might have got down and dirty in that one, but it did only get down to 97.77. So about a buck away from that major support before the stock decided to blast off into orbit and obviously is now in the green.
Actually, Dennis, your five-day low was 97.90.
So you were grabbing it off that 97.90.
No, level. If you were. I'm just saying you were looking at the super extra major support.
Here's a question for you on the levels. Now, I know, you know, you can look at the low, you can look at the high, but you can always pick a low or a high. Don't you like it when it coincides with something else a little bit more? Because, you know, in hindsight, it's 2020. You can always say, okay, well, that was the five-day low. But, you know, when you get 3 or 4 lows in the same area, that's where a number really becomes relevant, correct?
You're going to be kicking yourself in your tuchus when I tell you that 97.90 was the high on the third. 98.02 was, the low. 97.90 on the
triple bottom there.
The low on the second, 98.02. The low on the first, 98 even. So you did have a triple bottom in that area. It probably happened so quick. I mean, you're looking at different charts. I'm sure you just can't, you know, identify that.
I was too busy losing money in NVIDIA.
Okay.
And these multiple reports coming out at the same time. You're getting down dirty in one NVIDIA. It's hard to concentrate on Disney, too.
Yeah, but we got to – I mean, obviously we're not going to get down there today unless the market, just completely crashes. And I don't – as of right now, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. On the upside, your pre-market high in Disney is 104 – what is it, 104.45? 104.65. I want to see what happens at 104 today, because 104 has been getting into that gap fill from the last earnings report. So a gap between 104 and 107. So if it clears 104, I think it has a chance to continue this rally. Nothing up there. Actually, 106 fills the gap. So I might see what happens at 104. If you're trying to buy it on the cheap, let's see what happens on the close at 102.68.
The other stock I got down and dirty was Nordstrom. I tried to buy this one a couple of times. And you know what? Sometimes you just have those days, you know. And yesterday was one of those days where stuff just wasn't working out for me. And you're going to have those days as traders, you know, I've been trading 18 years. Now I make money every single day. And sometimes it's just not your day, you know, where you've got maybe you're calling some stuff pretty well, but you're missing on your executions. Or, you know, maybe you're just a little off, or maybe you're not calling stuff well at all. Yesterday was a day where, you know, I was calling stuff well, like I had a good feel for the market, but I was just too early, or most of the time it was just too early. And Nordstrom yesterday, I was like, okay, we saw Macy's get, you know, hit off the report there and bounce back. We saw Kohl's get annihilated yesterday and bounce back. Then we saw Nordstrom rallying hard off the initial report here. It actually rallied hard. I actually tried to short that pop because it got all the way up to like $44, which seemed ridiculous, but I just missed it. But then it came all the way back down, and they slammed this thing all the way down, and we're going to get those numbers from Spencer in just a second. And then I was trying to buy the pullback, and I got filled, and then I got chopped up, and it kept going lower, and then I was like, oh, I'm too early. And then, you know, I ended up selling, and I tried going long again because I had this bias in my head that it was going to bounce back. I still kind of have that bias in my head that it's going to bounce back because of what Kohl's and Macy's did. So anyways, I got chopped up a little bit in Nordstrom yesterday too. So it wasn't my day to trade the earnings reports. But Spencer, give us the details on JWN.
JWN reporting yesterday, right after the bell, Q3 EPS of 67 cents is a 3-cent beat on the estimate. Sales 3.54 billion versus 3.59 billion. So a slight miss on the sales number. Their fiscal year 17 sales growth will be around 4%, and the EPS for the fiscal year coming in at $2.85 to $2.95, which is 3 cents lower than the estimate.
And Joel, tell us about that after hours action, because right off the hop, they bought the hell out of this thing. And I was looking at 41, 42. I was like, are you kidding me? And it flew, but it was up there for like a second. Like, did you see the 44 print? Was there a 45?
Actually, I got a let me look at my different platforms.
I had one platform that showed 44, and I'm not sure if that was just an odd lot or something outside. What did you show for high? I know I saw 42s.
I got two platforms confirming 42-54 here.
Okay. That sounds more right to what I was seeing. And then I looked at my platform, and it had logged a 54 print or 44 print. And I was like, whoa, I did not see that. So that's why I was saying maybe it was up there for only a second because I never saw it either. And I was watching the numbers. But it popped initially on that report big time.
Yeah, so now you're just settling in the price discovery going on here in the $39 handle. Throw out the high, throw out the low here. Let's take a look at yesterday's range and 38.39. We've been down in this, but still a buck away. This rallied hard with the Macy's. So let's see, 38.39. Your close on Wednesday, 38.30. So let's see if it gets in under 39 into that 38.40, 38.50 area. I think it'd have some interest. Coming back on the upside, it needs to go green. It needs to get
I think
back.
It's going to.
You do? I would have fade you on this one. I'm not going to fade you.
I think it's going to go green. And the reason, here's another piece of evidence too. And you know what? Sometimes stock trading is just about building up your evidence and trying to, you know, get the case built up. And the evidence that I was building, first of all, and why, you know, I was biased to buy Nordstrom last night, although getting shaken out twice, was Kohl's, obviously, and Macy's both rallying on their reports. But now I have more evidence here this morning with JCPenney. A JCPenney report was not great here. Give us the numbers here, Spencer, and we're going to talk about it.
I thought they liked everyone. JCPenney reporting, I mean, what's this, like a $2 stock now? JCPenney Q3 adjusted EPS, 33-cent loss versus a 17-cent loss estimate. Sales of $2.81 billion versus $2.74. So they actually beat a little bit on the sales number, but their EPS was way worse than expected.
And what about guidance? The guidance wasn't great here either, I don't think.
I don't have it in front of me right now. Let me see if
Let me just see. I saw the numbers go by. I'm just trying to hunt it down very quickly here. I don't have it right in front of me either. I'm just trying to dig really quick here. Oh, where was it? I saw the guidance there. Same store sales were up a bit, but they were looking at EPS of, no, you're right. Yeah, I don't have the guidance exactly in front of me here either. So same store sales. Anyways, this report wasn't fantastic, but this was definitely good enough for JCPenney. When you look at the stock this morning, it's trading up 15%. You're like, wow, what a move in JCPenney. Well, it's only 40 cents because it's only a $2.75 stock. But this is just another thing. Like JCPenney just had to do anything not but S, you know, that word, the bed, and it was probably going to go higher. And that's exactly what, you know, it's an okay, it's a quarter that passed. And that's good enough. That's all they wanted. Squeeze the shorts here a little bit. Get a little relief pop here. Are they out of the woods? No, by any means. This company is not out of the woods. This company, I still think in the long term, is going to be a zero. But we want to squeeze the shorts a little bit today.
Indeed. And that put in a hard bottom, a quadruple bottom for you folks. Some institution bringing it in. This is the daily lows. You had 6 daily lows between 237. Between 235 and 250. And you had a pair of 237 lows, a pair of 235 lows. So you know that's just institutions backing up the truck saying, I'll buy all you want to sell here at this level. They're being rewarded. We're getting a nice pop. But you know what, Dennis? We're not yet to 330. 322 is your pre-market high. 330 gap down, I believe that was on the guidance, right? So 330, you close that and get above that, you fill a gap up to 361. Now, if you can't clear this 330 and get back, they sell this thing under, buyers will be stepping up way ahead of that quadruple bottom. Maybe the close, 275 if you want to try and buy it on weakness.
Jump over here, just away from the retailers for a second. One other stock that I had on my sheet to talk about from last night, actually it was two, is Equifax, but also Hertz. And Hertz, HT Zebra, getting a nice lift in the pre-market here. They really bought it. It's getting a decent lift here. It's still holding on to a 10% gain. Spencer, details from HT Zebra.
Q3 adjusted EPS of $1.42, which is a 10-cent beat. Sales of 2.6 versus $2.57 billion, so a slight beat on the sales number as well. Beat on top, beat on the bottom.
And Hertz, like I said, getting a 10% pop, but off the highs, Joel. This was higher. How high did we get last night when everybody's getting really excited for this Hertz report?
Hertz Donut got up to over $23.
Why do you call it Hertz Donut?
You ever do that to a kid?
No, I've never. This is, you're going to date yourself. Do you know what a Hertz Donut is, Spencer?
Oh, I don't. No, I have no idea.
Okay, tell us what a Hertz Donut is.
You go out to a little kid and you say, you know what a Hertz Donut is? And then they say,
I know
no.
Where you're going with this.
And then, like, you either punch them or pitch them on the.
That's what you do, eh?
And then
you're violent. You're a violent person. Hey, and then you say, Hertz
Uncle,
Donut?
Yeah. Uncle Larry used to do that to my kids. It wasn't something I invented. It wasn't me or my dad. It was Uncle Larry.
You're a violent person, Joel.
You know, not hard. I mean, you just pinch them. It's just like, come on. You know, little jokes with kids. Joe C.
I've never heard that before.
Could someone in the chat.
On my board today.
Brent heard
of it. I don't
want
to pour that, actually.
Yeah. The other day, I was going to do an article, or I did an article idea on Hertz, and I was, because they got knocked off the pedestal because of Avis and someone else's earnings. I can't think of who.
True Car.
And I said, you know, I wanted the headline to be, you know, something, those earnings Hertz Donut. And I knew I wouldn't get it past Chubbs. So it,
but these earnings don't hurt. The stock is higher. Where did it get up to last night? Before we went on the Hertz Donut tangent.
23.17 is your after hours high.
Or a buck off the highs.
Yeah.
Thoughts here as you're kind of in the middle of no man's land here when I look at the dailies.
Yeah, and are there even going to be rental cars, you know, when we have, like, driverless cars? And like,
yeah, you've been arguing for this for a zero for a while.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of these rental car companies here either, but they have come back significantly from the lows. And you go out the month, these are still ugly. But if you go out just, you know, look from the last 6 months, these things have been up substantially. So I don't know what it is, but I still think I agree with you, Joel. Long-term trend is not your friend here. And I don't know with the Ubers and with, you know, potentially driverless cars in their future and everything else. Maybe Hertz is going to have their own driverless cars, but I don't know. I think I'm, you know, not a fan of buying rental car companies.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's just this one I really don't understand. Maybe if you had some time today, you could do some research. They did like this a reorg, and
yeah, they did,
and it was like,
it was a messy chart.
I don't know what they're showing here on this monthly, but it was like way low price, and like we did a reorg and we're like, okay, we're a $50 stock now. And then
I'm not sure what they did either, and Spencer has always got the pro, which tracks all that stuff. If you want to look back and try to figure out the date on exactly what they did with the reorg on it, or if anybody in the chat knows. But you're right, Joel, this did some financial engineering.
Yeah, so anyways, but just look at, let's go to the daily chart here and see, as Dennis said, it's kind of messy here. Air up that, I don't know, this is in the middle of nowhere. I'd wait to try and buy it if it pulled back to we're trading up 217. Just keep an eye on your pre-market high. You don't get followed through the pre-market high of 23.17. Look for this to back and fill.
Jump over. Okay. Now, you say it all the time on the show, and I don't think we ever said, what do you mean back and fill? Tell me what back and filling is. I know what it is, but explain it to our listeners.
Back and filling is when, okay, you have a stock that got really beat up a couple days ago, right? And this thing went down to $19, just over $19 on,
yes.
Right? So now all of a sudden you get a report and you back up at 23 and you were unfortunate you didn't cover your short, right? When you had an opportunity to buy into weakness here.
Yeah.
So now it's going to back up, but people are going to try and get their buy orders filled because they might have missed the bottom here. So they'll look.
Yeah, it's going to fill up. The book's going to fill up with buy orders as the stock backs up. There's buyers below, underneath demand.
Yeah, underneath. Yeah, kind of like the opposite of that. Was that a good enough explanation?
Oh, that was good. Yeah, that was good. You use it all the time, and I don't think we've ever explained it on the show. So it's a good analogy, you know, back in the filling. So I agree with you. There could be some buyers here below. I mean, the stock has traded up here at $22 now for a few hours. We traded the entire pre-market session up here and after hours as well. So not sure how much we're going to back up, but we know when the real liquidity comes in at 9:30, you always got to be prepared for everything. And if the stock does back up and get anywhere down in the 20 or 21 handle, I do think you find buyers below as well.
All right. In the chat, can you guys explain front and back expected moves in TOS? I just think that's probably that might be the expected move off earnings reports. But if someone else that's on the TOS platform can help us with that one, That's what I know, that they give theoretical moves for the stocks, the options price. These guys are pretty good with the straddles, pricing them out. But someone in the chat can help us out on that one. We appreciate it.
No feeling in the chat. He's got the I can't feel. So I'm just going to call you No Feeling. wants to talk OSTK. Let's talk it. OSTK was a monster again yesterday. This stock, we said yesterday when we were covering on the show, has been a monster for a long time. I mean, really, in the last 6 months, stocks went from $14 to now $53. This is in full rocket ship mode here now. And this is, you know, like upside capitulation, everything you want to call it. But, you know, it's hard to stand in the way of these rocket ships. When the momentum starts going, they just go. And if you look yesterday, this stock, when we were talking about on the show, was around 45, 46 bucks after, you know, I believe it was the report. And then it just continued to tack on more money, and more buyers came in yesterday as well. And stocks in rocket ship mode. Now, when stocks are in rocket ship mode, I usually like to ring the register eventually, because eventually those rocket ships do run out of gas and they can come down quickly. But, you know, kind of ride the wave. I guess, you know, maybe raise your stop if you're in it, you know. But when stock goes in rocket ship mode for me, I usually like to take a little bit off the table if it starts to seem like it's getting too much too fast.
Wow, this stock has been around a long time, because John Dodson just
13 years, eh?
Yeah. Huh.
What know. Exactly? Okay, have you ever bought anything on Overstock.com?
What exactly do they sell? Like, that's
stuff that's
like,
overstocked.
I've never been on the site.
Exactly.
What are they selling there?
They sell goods. I mean, I've been
going there right now. First time ever on Overstock.com.
I've been on it right now.
And the first thing that happened was a pop-up to me. I hate that. Sign up today for a 12% off coupon. Well, I don't like that. It's day 48-hour event or whatever.
I think they're the Big Lots of the internet.
Furniture, rugs, decor, bed and bath, home improvement. So it's your online, basically, furniture store.
No, that's
I think that's a good way to describe it. They also have some blockchain stuff in the works.
What is blockchain? What do they have in the works?
We've written about it couple months ago. I don't actually remember.
And that's why No Feeling in the chat is saying it's getting the pop. That's probably anything to do with blockchain. This market,
right? Well, I mean, the blockchain right thing isn't like new. It's been out there for a couple months now. That they have their own private blockchain in the works or something. I can go into the pro.
Anything that's got that though in it is hot. And if you think it's somehow related to Bitcoin, they just buy the hell out of it. And I think right now a whole business model would be, you know what JCPenney should do? JCPenney should come in and somehow get involved with the blockchain. It would be like a $10 stock tomorrow. even if they put like 0.1% of their operations into, you know, blockchain research, it would be a $10 stock just because you said blockchain. So that's even more reason.
I'm going to read you what the CEO
because it looks like an online furniture store to me.
No, they are. That's what it is. But I'm going to read you what the CEO told us a couple months ago now. So it really comes. It's a solution that they built with regards to shorting the stock. So the CEO does not want people shorting their stock. So they built a blockchain API that takes the stock location process out of the hands of the prime brokers and puts it into the blockchain. So they're trying to minimize short selling.
What do you think of that?
Manipulate their stock price. That's what it sounds like to me. People who don't want shorts in the market, and you get these people that actually think that shorting is flat out un-American. It's flat out evil to short stocks. I will tell you the exact opposite. Shorts are the whole reason that price discovery is efficient. Shorts keep bubbles from getting to ridiculous levels. It's a main reason probably why, you know, so you can see Bitcoin go up forever and ever, because the thing is probably almost impossible to short. People can't bet on it going down. So, you know, I don't know how you go borrow Bitcoins. Maybe there's a process for it, and I'm not a Bitcoin. Maybe there is people who can bet against Bitcoin, but it's not easy. You know, it's definitely not easy. I don't think we should ask Jeff Goldman that, but you know, that's a side thing though. But things go up and up and up and up and up when you can't short them, and they can continue to go up. But then eventually those bubbles burst, and it is an epic disaster. And you feel sorry for the person who ends up buying a stock, you know, that is way too high just because, you know, it was restricted from people betting against it. So shorts keep prices, I would say, in check. So there, you know, there's that whole process of it. And you know, why not? Why should you not be able to bet on stocks going down? So, you know, that's my little rant there on shorting. And if this company is against people shorting their stock, I like it even less. So awesome stock chart. I'm not coming here shorting this rocket ship here, but if everybody's jumping in this because they said something about blockchain, if that's the whole reason this online furniture store is blasting off in orbit, I want no part of it. And I think it's lower here when I look at it a year from now.
So the thing that they built is called T0, and it's like T0.com is the website. And it's an API with a built-in auction system. So when a fund sends an order to T0, it auctions the stock and it generates a digital receipt on the blockchain, and that prevents overlocating. And
that's neat. That's a neat idea from, you know, but is that their, you know, what's their revenue from this? You know, is this their business?
I don't know.
Or is this just the buzz thing that's got the stock hot? Because there's a difference between a business model, something that, you know, the whole business is built around it, and, you know, just let's take advantage of the buzz right now, and we'll do this little thing on the side that's less than 1% of our revenue. So if they're generating 50% of their revenue from, you know, the blockchain somehow here, or they're doing something in a different way, that's cool. I highly doubt that's, you know, when I go to the site, it looks like an online furniture store. Online stuff is pretty cool. I mean, you know, everybody that's got online sites is doing better than the people who are in brick and mortar. So that's got one thing going for it too. But I also think there is a bubble in a lot of just online sites. And I still think Amazon is the site that everybody buys everything on. It's hard to fight Amazon. And if you're online, you do an online furniture store, I think you're fighting Amazon there too. So I think, you know, this is a stock that's really had a nice run. I don't want any part of it. That's not for me.
Let it go. Just let it go higher. And if you are one to play, you know, momentum and stuff, maybe, you know, just keep moving a sell stop to go short up and up and up, because I got a feeling that this might get citroned.
Hey, there you go. Remember I called that? Remember I had the best call ever. What was the stock? HMNY. And I said it at like 8 a.m. on the show, you know, somewhere between 8 and 9 a.m. that day, and when stock was at $35 or $36.
And then at 9:30 he came out with
that. At 9:30, well, he always does it in the market hours so he can get the maximum amount of people to bash the stock back down. It was like 9:40 or whatever. Yeah, he came out and actually citroned it, and it's back down to $10. I called that. That was the best call I've ever had. I actually predicted somebody doing something and sending out a tweet to knock a stock down, and it happened. And I don't know the guy. I mean, he's been on our show once. I had no idea he was going to do it. Just coincidental. But you're right. When you see these rocket ships charts, these are the ones that Citron licks his chops on. He and obviously Andrew Left we're talking about, and he goes out and shorts the stock, and then he tweets about it, and the stock falls 20%. I mean, he has a license to print money. That guy is going to eventually be the richest guy in the world if he can continue to, you know, to milk this gig. Because, and you gotta give him props. I mean, people follow what he does. If I go and short a stock and I talk about it on my radio show, it's not gonna fall 20% because I talked about it. So it's his power of influence that is incredible, and you gotta really give him props for that. Some people think, you know, it's, you know, manipulative, and, you know, I think there's an argument to be made there, but he is just giving his opinion. And just because the market wants to come in and knock a stock down 25% because Andrew Left said it's a bad stock, that's his opinion, and he's entitled to give his opinion. So I don't see really how you regulate that. And he's got a license to print money here right now. So if I could invest in Andrew Left from Citron, I think I would. Citron Public, let's invest in Citron. That would be the best investment at all, because that guy, he shorts a stock, tweets about it, falls 20%. It's unbelievable. He has a 20% lead every time he does something.
Let's create an ICO.
An ICO that just tracks Citron's performance.
Yeah,
initial coin offering.
You don't even know what that means.
What do you mean? I don't know what that means.
I don't really know. I knew it. You didn't know. I know it's initial coin offering. There's 10 million of those. Well, we missed that bandwagon because there's been, you know, 5 million of those things created now. So let's track the ETF that tracks Citron. ETF Citron. And we track his bank account.
That's a good idea. All right, 8:34. Now we're going to take our first break of the day, our only break of the day. We're going to grab the Reverend Emmanuel Lemelson to talk about some of his positions right now. He's been short Domino's for a while. He's long a couple of retail stocks, American Eagle, Guess, Express, HIBB, just to name a few of the stocks that he's in. So we'll be right back with the Reverend.
Thank you. Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Benzinga Pro. I'm your co-host, Joel Alcon, along with Dennis Dick. Spencer Israel working the boards, and we are joined by Reverend Emmanuel Lemelson, founder and president of the Lantern Foundation. Reverend, how are you doing on this Veterans Day Friday?
Thank God. Very good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. We're doing well here. Man, just
I'm always glad to join you. You have the best show on the internet. I just want to say that. And I
the best show on the whole internet.
The whole internet?
The whole internet. The whole internet. The whole internet.
Wow, what a compliment. We will have to get that. We'll have to get that in print later, okay, there, Spencer. Well, let's just talk general market here. Market psychology, a year after the election. Here we are at levels that really no one thought we would be at. Just give us your current assessment of the psychology in the market, the looming debate over tax, lack of reform going on in the government here. Give us your overall macro assessment of the market.
Yeah, so okay, I think there's three questions there. Well, Joel, I've refrained over the last 6 or 7 years from commenting on whether the market would go up or down. That's a common question, of course, that's asked from participants in the market. But increasingly, I'm of the opinion that it's very, a very dangerous market. And the great historian, John Kenneth Galbraith, in his seminal work, The Crash of 29, he has this beautiful, poignant statement he makes at one point. He says, you sort of determine that a market's overpriced more or less in the context when everyone begins to believe it's their God-given right to get rich in the stock market. And, maybe that is a hallmark of euphoria. But if prices keep rising every day and it just goes up in one direction, it's probably not reality. I mean, markets move in cycles. And if someone wanted to get really a good sense of how that works, Bridgewater Associates, Ray Dalio, they published a wonderful short video. It's about 30 minutes on their website explaining market cycles, if it's something that people aren't familiar with. Even if tax reform goes through quickly, which would be a boost to corporate earnings, obviously, think that's probably already priced in the market, and any geopolitical investor, many black swan events, this read that I see now, I think it can shift to fear very, very quickly, really in a matter of milliseconds. I mean, most market participants are pretty skittish, and public markets for securities are always liquid, so that greed can turn into fear very quickly. So people, I think, you have to be very careful, Joel. That's my thought.
Okay. No, that's good. It's very consistent. I mean, for all the times that we've had you on the show, I think maybe going back to 2012 or 2013, you've been very, very consistent in your overall outlook on the market. But let's get to some of your individual issues here that you've been tracking. And when we had you on, Bob, back in August, you were looking at the retail sector, and you were probably the only one sticking bids out here in some of these stocks. And I just want to talk about a few of these, how, the positions that you currently have and price targets, or maybe even got out of some of them already. Let's start with American Eagle Outfitters.
Yeah, we still have a small position in American Eagle. It's not our highest conviction idea, but we've done well on it. I think importantly, up pretty significantly since we had the last interview. I don't know the exact percent, but it's done well, and it's a strong retail player. I think there's been some consolidation. Some of their nearest peers, their competitors, have struggled with solvency, so that probably bodes well for long-term for AEO. They're a better run company and a decent dividend. What we talked about in our last interview, I think back in August, was just we're really trying to add dividend pairs to the portfolio. Really deep value guys like myself, sometimes we overlook the value of dividends, and that's a mistake because that income comes in and compound. And so I want to sort of get back to adding more dividend bears to the portfolio, and that's what we've been working on. AO has been one of them.
They got a dividend? They pay a dividend?
I thought well, yes.
3.73%.
Really? Wow. I'm just surprised. I mean, that for a – I'm surprised they haven't cut that. But anyways, you get paid a little capital appreciation as well. Let's move on to another retailer, Guess, GES. You had talked about that one. Man, you had to get in before – wow, this has had a double gap up chart. Not sure when you were participating in this one. We just hit a high of 1754, clinging to the 1550 level. Talk about Guess.
Yeah, Guess and Express. We bought Guess way back at basically the bottom. I mean, I don't know the exact price off the top of my mind, but a very high rate of return on it. And but it's not a really super high conviction idea either for us. Guess and Express both. Not as strong of a franchise business as AEO. And retail overall is really tough to invest in successfully over the long run because preferences change so quickly. You see that with, for example, the athleisure market in sports retailers, where a lot of those retailers are really getting pummeled because something that was popular for a number of years is suddenly no longer popular. So you almost have to have this like prophetic ability to determine what tastes are going to be in the future. So, you know, it's not the best businesses for the super long run. I mean, I don't know where Guess will be in 10 years. So we don't have huge commitments in Guess or Express. But again, we did well because we bought them at really low prices. And they've gone up since we spoke last time, but I don't think they've gone up as much as AEO. I'm pretty sure everything we spoke about on last interview has gone up on the long side.
All right, but we haven't even got to your favorite yet, and that's Hibbert Sports, H-I-B-B. You said this one, you're saying you're buying and you keep buying. You've just ripped the sell button off your computer on this one. Long, 940 low, long consolidation here. Looks like it's really trying to break out here over 14 and change. Tell us what your expectations are for Hibbert Sports.
Yeah, Hibbert is, you know, honestly, I thought it was one of the best value investments we'd come across in the last 7 years, Joel. They've got over 1,000 stores. It's an unusual business because they didn't participate in e-commerce, which I can't understand why they didn't. Actually, I flew down to Birmingham to meet with the CEO and the CFO and asked them myself, is there something I'm missing? Was there a strategy here? But, you know, they just really know their business well. These guys are really sharp. They move really fast. They actually address a slightly different market than most people think. Most people think it's just a small Dick's. But they've been extremely shrewd. They've, you know, set up their locations near Walmarts and low-cost strip malls versus the A-plus malls that are very high rent. And they address sports teams and really the pro sports mindset versus, you know, a Dick's, which becomes like a smorgasbord of everything in the store. Although I have to say, initially, full disclosure, we've been buying Dick's as well, even though we don't usually buy two securities in the same industry sector. Dick's just got so cheap at one point. But yeah, I mean, we loaded up substantially, and I think just a few days before our last interview, they had their earnings. We bought a huge block of shares, $9.40 a share, $9.50 a share. I couldn't believe it, the price. You know, we have a company that for 30 years goes without taking a loss, and their management team is that focused and that aggressive. You know, some of the things that the media is saying about them are not really rational, like saying they're, it's too little too late with their e-commerce. Well, what does that mean? If the company was that successful for that long without a site, why would you bet that they're not going to benefit from having an e-commerce business? So I think they're going to do their omnichannel business extremely well. Anyone can go to and look at the growth in their traffic on their website. It's just an incredibly well-run business. I think it's going to be a home run for us. I mean, we have already have a very significant rate of return, certainly since our last interview. So that wound up being a question call as well, but we're keeping it. I mean, I could see us holding that in 10 years for sure. I think that's a little bit easier one to predict where things are going than like a Guess or an Express. It's not predicated on preferences, fashion, and so forth. We live in a country where people are obsessed with sports and sports teams, and from a very young age, and they're addressing a very important market segment, both in terms of their geographical retail location, but now online. If we say like they're really late to the e-commerce business, and maybe you can buy, you know, a pair of Nike at Amazon a little cheaper, and probably with a whole lot better contextual information. I mean, that's probably true, but Amazon doesn't have 1,000 small distribution centers from which people can receive their product or it can be shipped from. So you can kind of look at these models and say, well, you know, why couldn't they turn these retail stores into distribution centers? And that's what they're doing. They've got a tangible foot in the door there, and I don't think they're going to go away. They're not going to perish.
Are you a sports fan at all?
You know, Joel, people, they say to me, they say, Father Man, you've got to get into sports because the whole country cares about that. And that's why I've been remiss. I have to admit, I'm just never really followed sports, not ball sports, at least.
You know what? I know what your favorite play would be if you like football.
Hail Mary. All right, Joel. All right. Come on.
Spencer, you can't take my – he's like –
That fruit was hanging so low, it was hitting the floor. All right.
All right. Reverend, you know I just like to joke around with stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
My question is, how big are their stores? How big are these Hibbert stores?
They're small.
They're small, huh?
They're small, actually. And sometimes there's a Foot Locker right next door. And Foot Locker is a very, very significant competitor. It shouldn't be overlooked. They're small format stores. But you know, they've really focused on this sort of old school business model, which is businesses, the purpose of business to make money. And if, you know, they're really good at renegotiating leases. They keep their overhead way down because they're not in the A-plus malls. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a model that's going to work. I think that everyone has sort of been affected by, you know, what goes on with footwear to a certain extent, because that's a big part of the business. So when Nike or Adidas are not turning out the next big thing, it kind of brings everyone down. And they go into like lockdown mode and start cutting prices, and it gets into a pricing war a little bit. But because Hibbett's also selling a lot of other very team sports-oriented items,
they're not going to be as affected
by that.
No, the team, you get 20 people, right? Yeah. If you're doing a team, then and you're doing the order from Hibbett Sports, everybody has to go to Hibbett Sports to get it for the team, or the league's purchase from there. So you're targeting, you know, a bigger customer base. But I want to move on to one more stock here. And what I like about you, Reverend, is like you play both sides of the market. And you have some longs and you have some shorts. And you've been pounding the table on this one for a while. Got to give you credit. Domino's Pizza, I don't know how you were doing when it was up there at 221.58. Maybe you were just selling more up there. But the chart looks bad here. Tell us about your position and what you're looking for in Domino's Pizza.
Yeah, well, yeah, we've been declaiming publicly against the company for, what, a year and a half. You know, it's just, it's a terrible business, frankly, in my opinion. And, you know, it's a shame when you see all these analysts out giving price targets of $210 or $220 a share. I mean, the financials of the company just have gotten worse. So in the last 12 months, for example, tangible book has gone to minus $65 a share approximately, while revenues are up, you know, about 10%. And that tangible book value is, you know, we're talking about a deficit, it's increased by almost 50%. So, you know, this is like a house of cards, in my opinion. And it's because of what I've called corporate governance failures, where the CEO is rewarded for a stock price versus shareholder the value, creating shareholder value. He's actually destroying shareholder value, and it's getting worse. So, you know, that's what we don't want in our positions in America. And, you know, when you have a market that only goes up in a direction, the guy could sell anything. I mean, he's selling this vision of the future, which is not going to help Domino's. I mean, if we have autonomous vehicles and drones delivering fast food and pizza, whatever, that's really an existential threat. It's been my position all along. And that won't be controlled by them. So they like to say, well, we're a technology company, but that's a pretty far-fetched claim. And I think this is going to catch up with them. As growth slows and people realize the international market's not growing as fast, heaven forbid the price of cheddar cheese goes up, or all the cost of energy that have really helped to keep them going, moving along. You've got a company in a very precarious position financially. So I always like that short. I mean, we did short more of it as it went up. I mean, we shorted in two different occasions. The second time around, I think we were around 189 or maybe 187, the average short price, not as high as I would like it to have been. We're always short on capital here at Lemelson Capital, as I'm saying, because we have more ideas than capital. But it's been proven right. It's been a pretty long fall. It started in October, early October, and it's just been, you know, sliding down. That will probably change people's sense of what a great investment is, because people's emotive state will change with share price. And I think once that sets in, it's going to come back down to earth.
Hey, Reverend, actually, you mentioned it in your answer, but I wanted to ask you straight up. In your opinion, is Domino's Pizza a tech company or a pizza company?
Well, no, I don't think it is. I mean, you know, they have a great app. Well, you know, 14-year-old kids in high school can build apps, using Apple's Swift programming language. I mean, they say, well, we have this huge office building full of hundreds of tech workers. Well, you know, you got to kind of know what you are as a company. When you change, you try to change quickly what you do and your core competencies, there's a lot of risk. And changing the DNA of a company like that, there's a lot of risk. So, and again, pizza is such a ubiquitous food item. It's hyper-competitive. There's new players entering the market all the time. You know, I've always said the thing about technology is that the barriers to entry are low. It's not capital intensive. There's absolutely nothing stopping Papa John's or Pizza Hut or anyone else from moving in the same direction. So I don't see anything they're doing as being truly proprietary. And, you know, you see some growth in the numbers, but that's mostly because they're opening new stores. And keep in mind, it's not just the parent company, which is mired in debt. The franchisees are often taking on a tremendous amount of debt to open these stores. So you're just like debt on top of debt. And they're feeding, of course, the chain to the parents. But, you know, these companies, these locations are being opened up globally, they can close just as easily, and sales can plateau or decline. I think once that happens, which is inevitable, you know, shareholders are going to be very worried and start asking questions about the balance sheet. And you look at the balance sheet and it's a mess. It's a complete mess. I mean, it shouldn't be allowed. I don't know. It's crazy.
All right. Reverend Emmanuel Lemelson, he is the CIO of Lemelson Capital Management. He's also the founder of the Lantern Foundation. Reverend, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah. If you guys have a few more minutes, I'd love to tell you about an investment we've made that hasn't done so well. But it sounds like we might be out of time, huh?
All right. Well, we'll keep that on for next time. Don't forget what it was.
All righty, guys.
All right. Have a good one.
Well, hey, great talking to you guys. And, all right. Always good being on your show.
You really too as well. Care. Have a good weekend.
Bye-bye.
All right, 8:51 now. Guys, what's doing in the markets? Anything?
Banks catching a bit. TLT, we haven't talked about it yet here. TLT is annihilated today. We're down $1.27 on the TLT, so we know that's going to be bad for utility stocks, bad for your dividend plays, good for your financials. The banks are all catching a bit here. So you can look, you know, S&Ps are trading down. You're like, whoa, what's going on with Citigroup? What's going on with JP Morgan? TLT is your indicator for the banks. And when the TLT is down big, the banks go up. And you can see now Bank of America catching a bit. Citigroup is up 32 cents. JP Morgan's up 37 cents. It's just kind of been catching fire here in the last half an hour or so. So banks look like a source of strength here today. I'm really looking at these S&Ps, and I know we sold off significantly overnight here, Joel, but I'm really struggling to find out exactly what is really trading down. You know, you had a good report from NVIDIA. It's trading up. I'm looking at my screen. I'm seeing a lot of stocks trading in the green here today. I'm sure there's going to be some stocks that are red, but man, when I look at the individual, you know, components here, I don't see a hell of a lot in the red. So, you know, I think it's not surprising the S&Ps continue to bounce back. We started the show and the S&Ps were down about 6. We're only down 3 now. I think this market's going positive if these stocks are any indicator, because there's a lot of stuff that's green today.
There's some stuff in the red, too. You know how
what do you got big in the red?
Not
really
big.
Really, what do you got dragging?
I can tell you that the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, the top 7 components in the S&P are all in the red.
Which ones?
Apple by a third of
Apple's green.
Apple's not green.
Sure it is. 75.30. You got a ex-dividend today, buddy. Got to use his ex-dividend dates. If Apple went ex-dividend, actually, for 63 cents, closed with 175.88. Its close, just a close, is 175 and a quarter. 175.30 is trading. It's a nickel up. Next. Oh. I'm poking a hole in your thesis. Next.
Okay. You want to go for a lunch on the other 6?
Oh, no, they're probably right. But
Google's down 276. Are they ex-dividend too?
No, they're not ex-dividend. Google is trading slightly in the red here.
Microsoft?
Next.
Microsoft down 0.27.
Yeah, Microsoft's down a little bit here. Facebook. So your Qs are actually a little bit of a drag. It's down 0.1%.
Yeah, I mean,
continue.
They're not down much. They're not down
continue,
much.
Continue.
Facebook is down 37 cents.
Well, I got the Barron's hate 2 days ago.
Amazon's
down. Or the Barron's love. That got the Barron's love, which is equal to hate.
Okay. Amazon slightly in the red. J&J slightly in the red. Berkshire has.
These are all on the comeback trail. BTFD overnight. What was the low here overnight? How far are we off the lows in the S&P? I saw us down like 10. Right?
71.50. That was 6 points lower. Okay, Dennis.
Where are we now?
77.80. 77. Let's call it 78 even. Dennis, we haven't had a lunch bet in a while.
What are you trying to propose?
I say that we don't go green on the day.
Even if we just touch green.
Like we have to, yeah, we have to touch. If we hit 84 even, I'm not even.
Well, I don't have S&P quotes. I don't pay $600 a month. Give me a number on the spy. We got to go 258.18 to go green. Is that what you're proposing?
Yep.
258.18. Gentlemen, we have a lunch bet. We have a lunch
finally,
bet. I'm saying we go green here on the day. Anywhere today.
Anywhere today.
Is it expiring at 4 o'clock or is it expiring at 8 o'clock? Actually, because the spy is open later.
Let's go. There's not going to be a lot of after.
I'll give you the 4 o'clock.
Okay.
4 all o'clock. Right. There we go.
And the banks are closed today.
I'm
right?
in. You have me. I'm in.
All right. And give it up the edge. That is giving up the edge, something he never does.
Give it up the edge. Yeah.
And then we are, just to clarify, I'm down 2 steak dinners and even on the lunches.
I don't know if you're even on the lunches.
Well, we're going to wipe the slate clean and call it even.
We're
going to wipe the slate. Any imbalances?
There is. Bank of America, 228,000 to sell. That's going the opposite way. I would expect that to either flip because financials are strong here today. I think you'll find buyers coming to that. Full disclosure, I'm long Bank America, BAC. Citigroup small buy amount, 16,000. The banks are going to be a source of strength, I think, here today. So, and we've already been talking about them a lot here in the pre-market. Alibaba, there's your trend. Alibaba buy and balance here once again. 115,000 to buy in BABA. It is your honey badger stock. It doesn't matter. The market goes down. Baba don't care. It goes up. It's up $1.17 here this morning. So BABA still showing a lot of life here.
You know
here.
What tomorrow like, is?
Singles Day.
Yeah.
Isn't it? That's where all the singles go on Alibaba and buy all their stuff.
No, it's because it's 11-11. Nice try. I predict they exceed $20 billion in sales tomorrow. Wow, just yeah. tomorrow.
What they do last year?
17, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Baba still hot. So we'll see. Sometimes it gets a lift. I think you'll see some strength here today. You're already seeing it. You know what? There's got to be a play. We should just look back to all the singles day and buying it the day before singles day, not the day after, because you know sometimes it's going to disappoint. But the day before, we should go back and look. You know, a quantitative edge there for you. Buying Alibaba the day before singles day, or 2 days before, and selling it, you know, right at the close of the night before singles day. I bet there's some money to be made there.
I bet you can do some artificial intelligence and do that or yeah, back test.
Yeah, automate that one. I can just put a pop up on my screen. Singles day coming in 2 days. Buy Alibaba. Ding.
Wow, house and mouse.
I would have made money. I'd be up $1 already if I bought the clothes. So house if I would have bought Baba the clothes, I'd be already up $1. You know, scalper blood me, I'd be like, sell, sell, sell. But
Disney blasting off here, up three sticks now, 105.73.
That's off the house and mouse.
Yeah, trying to fill a gap from the last earnings report. But real quick, before we close out the show, we had a really nice event here at the office yesterday. Downtown Josh Brown from CNBC nice. Was in the office. He gave a nice talk, answered a lot of good questions. And he
answered your question, Joel.
He did. He did answer them. I asked about risk tolerance for investors and hedging, and he gave a very good answer. But another investor was here, and Luke and I were talking with him about GE. And we talk about this. How about this theory for GE? How about everybody that's going to dump this to take a loss in year end and then buy it back in January?
Oh, yeah. That's yeah. what it's going to be for tax loss selling. I might be one of those.
Yeah.
I might actually be that guy that's going to dump it for the tax losses.
All right. Well,
we'll see.
Let me know when you sell that 100,000.
Oh, when I sell my GE position, that is the absolute bottom. Just like I sold the bottom in Snap. I'll be selling the bottom in GE. So, you know, you'll know safely. Well, Dennis is out. It's now safe to buy.
Yeah, GE. But then you can buy it back, right? In after the new year, or at least, you know, 30 days after. But, all right, 8:59 here. S&Ps are mid-range on the session. I got to get my order in at 58.17. Make sure
hold the market down for the bet. I got to write this down because I forget the bets I win and then you don't remind me.
Yes, I do. Okay, Spencer.
258.18 on S&Ps. Dennis gets lunch.
Okay.
And I'll collect that next week from you.
All right, Spencer, you want to wrap things up?
Sure. On the docket for next week's shows, we're joined by Todd Gordon. Trading Analysis is his site. He's a frequent CNBC guest as well. Jeff Hirsch will join us. Stock Traders Almanac is his piece of work there. Dave Landry would join us. He's a market structure expert. Ian Weiner, analyst at Wedbush. So a good slate of guests on next week's shows, and we'll probably add more to that slate as well. If you want to catch our show again, you can do so by going to Benzinga's YouTube channel, youtube.com/BenzingaTV, or going to our podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. If you listen to our show on YouTube or on our podcast, our live chat is every day at premarket.benzinga.com. It's where the show airs, and there's a chat right below that. It's where most of our live listeners are watching and listening, and it's where Joel, Dennis, and myself hop in and talk to people about what we're talking about on the show. So premarket.benzinga.com is the chat, or YouTube, or our podcast. Those are all the places to catch our show. But that's it for us today. Hope everyone has had a good day and a good week. Hope you have a good weekend. We'll be back with you on Monday.